This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. They offer just about every battery under the sun, from car and truck batteries to batteries for your trail cameras and rangefinders. Select retail locations even offer cell phone repair and cracked screen repair. Find a local retail location at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith
and Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
What would you, as a hunter, do if the game species that you loved so much, it was the thing you looked forward to the most when it came to your year outside of life, everyday life, work, family, but hunting specifically, the game species you enjoyed the most was in a decline. Or you just started to notice less and less on your farm. At what point would you get before you started trying to change things and turn the sinking ship around or stop the ship from sinking? If I'm being honest with you guys, I've reached that point with the wild turkey here in Missouri. There's been great seasons in the past. There's been lower success seasons in the past. But there has become a growing trend of each and every year I hear people talk about seeing less turkeys, hearing less turkeys. So I'm sorry if you're wanting to hear us talk about something other than the wild turkey. But it's not all sunshine and rainbows in game management. In a lot of the time. So we're going to jump in once again this week to talk wild turkeys, but we're bringing on two shows that I'm sure each and every one of you are familiar with. And we've got Mark Dury from Dury Outdoors and Michael Hunsucker and Sean Luchtel from Heartland Bowhunter coming on and to talk about the years of hunting Missouri previously to now, things that they're trying to do, and the message that we're all trying to do together to help encourage, inspire, and hopefully get some answers in what we should be doing. Missouri Department of Conservation, who handles all our regulations, they're kind of got a bad situation where they have to make all the public happy with their rules and regulations. So it's not a position I want to be, but I certainly think that we should be talking about it and should all be aware that there is a problem in the decline of the wild turkey. So I wanted to reach out to these guys for this week's podcast to basically confirm everything I'd already heard and see if they're dealing with the same things that most of us are dealing with. And that turned out to be true. We've got a two-part, two interviews here. We're going to kick it off with Mark Dury, and then about 30 minutes in, we're going to jump over to Michael and Sean and hear their thoughts as well. So, guys, I hope you enjoy. When you listen to this podcast, please share it on social media handles or social media pages to help get this message out there even more, to help support us. That's one of the biggest questions guys ask us is how can they support us. Hat sales are great, wearing our hats, apparel, things like that are great, but ultimately just sharing our content on social media and other platforms or with friends and family is the very best. So we appreciate it, guys. Enjoy this week's podcast. All right, round two of this week's podcast, we're going to interview Mr. Mark Dury about all his years of Missouri turkey hunting and what he's seeing, what he's doing to help ensure healthy turkey populations, ideas he may have. I'm really looking forward to this one. So let's just jump right in. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, Adam.
Yeah. So you guys, once again, it appears you've had another hot season. Tell us where you started. And I guess as you're winding down turkey season, where all you've been this past spring chasing turkeys.
Well, in years past, I you know, would go to 8 or 9 states, and then with COVID last year, that you know, travel was, you know, really reduced. And then this year, I kept more of a reduced schedule because Wade, who normally goes with me, he and Kyle had their first baby in February, so we took a more reduced approach to it. So we started in Texas, or at least I did with Wade. He had gone to Florida prior to that for a couple of days, and then we went to Texas. Actually, I went with Taylor first, then came back, then went again. I was there for the opener of the South Zone and the North Zone. And then, of course, Missouri and Iowa for 4 straight weeks between the two. And then probably even closer to 5 weeks. And then I went down to Kansas and hunted with Dan Thurston a little bit. So all total, I probably got, you know, 6 weeks of turkey hunting in and had a enjoyable season, as they all are. And, you know, hate seeing that last day come, like everybody listening to this right now. And we're now into the off season. The very long summer is ahead. So just biding our time till bow season starts again.
There you go. Yeah. Question for you. You've been doing this a lot. How long has Dury Outdoors been producing content?
We started in 89. So this is our 32nd year. And I started turkey hunting myself. Probably 6 years prior to that. I probably started in 82 or 83. So, you know, almost 40 years for me in the turkey woods. And gosh, I just can't get enough of it. I always say I like to deer hunt and love to turkey hunt. It still has my heart when it comes to the outdoors. I would much rather turkey hunt than anything else. So, you know, it really pains me to see what's happening to populations in a lot of different states and areas. And, not a lot of answers out there how to turn it around. So it's concerning. And I kind of saw this trend a few years ago in a lot of different areas that I was hunting. And I was like, man, I hope this never hits our areas. And I always say I manage turkeys harder than I do manage deer, you know, trying to work on those nest predators, trying to increase habitat, increase cover, and most importantly, decrease hunting pressure on the birds. We kill a lot of turkeys, but we spread that hunting pressure out over a large area. So I hunt quite a few different parcels of ground, specifically there in Missouri and Iowa. I think we hunt probably a little over 10,000 acres, and I think that is across over 40 farms, you know, that wow. are either leased or have permission on or help manage or, you know, so we really spread it out, and we just do not pound our birds whatsoever. I don't want to ever over harvest because they have enough trouble staying alive without us, you know, working on them.
You know, Mark, that brings up an interesting question I have for you, and I want to get your thought on it. I've heard a lot of stuff, and you know, I talked to a lot of researchers, and I mean, I feel like that's the base of everything we do is let's follow the research. That tells us the truth. That tells us unbiased information that we should go off of. But ultimately, there is times where I look at the research and I say, yeah, I believe that, but yet in the real world and in application, I know certain things to be true. And I've often heard that you can't stockpile turkeys. If you don't kill them, likely something else will. But I know one thing to be true. A dead turkey does not gobble guaranteed. And so if I don't shoot him, there's a chance he's going to be there next year. So on with that kind of mindset where you don't over hunt them, have you noticed that, like, okay, we're not going to hunt, or we've shot one bird, but there's three others. Have you noticed that it sounds like that's been a pretty good ticket to success for you guys?
It has. I mean, we just went through turkey season, and all total in our Missouri and Iowa camps could take a lot of guests. You know, we were able to harvest 32 mature gobblers on film.
Awesome.
So that sounds like a big number, but we do that annually. You know, we've been doing that for years in that 25 to 35 birds a year range. And we had amazing hunting this spring. We had birds on every farm, good numbers of turkeys, but we're very careful with those populations. You know, if we go into a 160 acre farm and there's three birds gobbling on it, at most we would take was one, and we may not take any. You know, if we feel they're a little bit low, we just leave them alone and go find a place that really had a better hatch two previous seasons and find that group of 6 or 7 2-year-olds and pick on them a little bit and kill one of those. And we're very careful. I kind of prescribe to the teachings and the thought process of Dr. Chamberlain. I don't know if you've ever had Mike on.
He's been on two or three times and his colleague a couple of times. So, yeah, okay. We're well aware.
You know, Mike, and one of the things that he shared with me one day when we had him on a podcast was a lot of the research is showing that it's really the overhunting of the birds during the mating season that's disturbing a lot of the mating and a lot of the nesting. And he said something to me that stuck with me. He said, you know, 15 years ago, the way people hunted them, henned up turkeys would take care of themselves because they were very hard to kill. And he said, with the advent of the fanning techniques and the strutting decoy techniques and so on and so forth, he said it's allowed people to be a lot more effective during the mating season when peak breeding's going on and really dominant mature gobblers are getting taken out and they're not backfilling it to take care of those hens. So we've started to really kind of steer away from those situations when we see, you know, what looks to be a mature mating tom with 5 or 6 hens. We'll go the other way, you know, and try them another day. Or, yeah, you know, especially if there's not other birds in the vicinity. Now, however, if there's 6 or 7 gobbling within, you know, a couple hundred acres, and it's not as bad a deal to kill a turkey out of that. But I what he told me really stuck with me. So we started managing that point. And a lot of times we won't go back to those bigger, older turkeys that have been with a lot of hens till the latter part of the season after he's done his breeding, which is one thing he recommended, hunting them later in the mating cycle as opposed to early. So I think that was good advice. However, I don't think that's the whole reason that we're seeing declines in the turkey population. I think it's multifactorial, you know.
Exactly.
You talk nest predators, all the different herbicides that are new within the last decade to try and take care of these weeds, the coatings on the seed, that they're out there in the field picking on. So those are some of the things I scratch my head about and wonder, you know, can this be good for them? You know, because a lot of these things, these hybrids are changing, and, you know, that wasn't part of their diet before. Is that part of what's killing them?
Yeah.
You see turkeys with pox and blackhead, which I don't think there's really any way to avoid, you know, them getting that. But in general, though, I will say our population, because we've been so careful with it over the last 10 years, say, the same time that we're seeing a really major decline in a lot of parts of the Midwest, our bird numbers are very good on our farms. They are the same as they were a decade ago. I haven't seen much decline. You see undulations with the population based on hatches, but in general, we've had decent hatches the last 3 or 4 years. You know, okay hatches, not great.
Yeah.
So far, so good, but I keep waiting for, you know, the shoe to drop, and all of a sudden I go out there and my birds are gone. It happened to a good buddy of mine, Stephen McBee, this year. He's like, man, I had so many birds in the winter. And he goes, I go spring turkey hunting. He goes, it's like they disappeared. And yeah. Stephen and his family, they farm over 20,000 acres. So it's a big, giant, you know, parcels that they're looking at. And he was like, I don't know where my birds went, you know, so, you know, and they don't hunt theirs very hard either. So that's concerning.
Yeah, for sure. I've said it, you know, my family farm, we've had in the 90s and early 2000s, my gosh, it seemed like there were turkeys everywhere. And then during the teens, a couple really wet springs, bad hatches, and we hunted them pretty hard 1 year. And we all filled tags, and it was like, okay, there's still some decent gobblers around. And then it was like, lights off, one or two birds. And it was like, all right, boys, we're staying out of there for a few years, let them rebuild. And we, this was the first year we went back, and that we heard a lot of turkeys. And it was like, okay, we can do things, we can manipulate habitat, and we can do a lot of things to bring the turkeys back. But then when you talk to neighbors, or you talk to people in your county, and they're like, it's terrible, it's terrible. And I hear guys up in north say it's worst season in 45 years. You're like, whoa, some things are going on. And it makes you wonder if guys like you and I that are doing a lot of habitat, we're going to end up being the islands of birds.
Yep.
And if restocking comes along, we're going to be the ones having to carry the weight, I guess.
Potentially. You know, the other thing that doesn't get talked about a great deal, they took out like 25% of the CRP contracts about 3 years ago.
Yep.
And that does not get talked about. So that habitat just got wiped away. It went back into productive tillable in many cases. And when you start doing that on a large scale like that, that's a lot of habitat, a lot of nesting habitat that just got wiped away. And it also led to, you know, less nesting and less nest success.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard many people talk about that, but I do think that has had some play in it, coupled with nest predation, the wet springs, all the other factors we've talked about. I think it all just piles on a bird that's hard to keep alive anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you can get on social media and ask, okay, what do you guys believe is the cause for turkey decline? And you'll get a list of a mile long, and almost every single one of them is right in some aspect. Yeah, there's more predators, there's less trappers, the habitat's worse, the timber's overstocked, flooding, over-harvesting. It's like, you all are correct. And that's the issue of trying to fix this, is there's so many things we have to do to try to help. And so that's one of the, what you brought up something about herbicides and different things. I remember as a kid, and I'm not that old, I wish I was still really young, but I remember even when I was a kid, and that wasn't that long ago, but you would drive through the countryside and your windshield would be covered in bugs. And now you drive through the countryside and it just doesn't, it's just not nearly as many bugs as it seems like. And that, of course, bugs being a huge part of a turkey's diet, it's a little bit concerning there too.
I can't disagree with that. And I, you know, you look at, we came out with Roundup however many years ago, 30 maybe, I don't know what it was. And that was the choice herbicide for many years. Then all of a sudden you have a bunch of weeds that are resistant to that.
Yep.
And now they're coming out with super killers to kill all these weeds, you know, and you think, man, this just can't be good for the ecosystem in general.
Yep.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not knocking it because that's what we use to keep our food plots clean.
Yep.
But you wonder what damage, you know, we might be doing to different wildlife species.
Absolutely.
Know?
Yep.
But you know, I'm also a big, you know, I love warm season grass stands. And I think that also helps because I have so much of it on my farms.
Yeah.
I've got freaking pheasant out the wazoo. I've got turkeys that are in good shape. You know, we've got quail populations. So yep. A lot of it's probably just lack of habitat when you get right down to it.
Yeah. I mean, you can drive through and see farms like yours or any other guy who's really devoted to improving habitat and really managing for wildlife. And you'll see a lot of diversity with grasses, managed timber, some burning thrown in there. And you're like, okay, that, they got some stuff going. And then you can quickly get out of that and see overgrazed pasture or plowed over fields for 4 months or timber just full of invasives. And you're like, oh, yeah, it'd be tough for a turkey to survive on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
looking back, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, or even go to the 80s, where do you, I guess, here's a question. If you were asked the 80s, 90s, or early 2000s, what 10-year period right there would you say the turkeys were the best hunting?
If I had to pick a period, I would say probably the 90s, if I just had to pick a period, that or the early 2000s. Right in there, it was pretty darn good for a long period of time, and it really seems like it's been the last decade or so that we've started to see some major declines in the Midwest. And, you know, of course, out of that last decade, we've had 100-year, 500-year, and 1,000-year events, flooding in many of the reservoirs and river bottoms throughout the Midwest. You know, and when you start having those types of, you know, historical flooding events all within 10 to 15 years, you know you're doing some damage to a lot of ground nesters. I mean, there's just no other way around it. So, like we keep saying, it's very multifactorial, but man, take me back to 1995 or 97. I mean, there was turkeys everywhere. And I remember those years specifically because those were the years that I had MAD and I had big camps with riders coming in. And I mean, it was just nothing to go out and get a turkey for a rider, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we had lots of opportunities and lots of birds, and you could strike birds back then. These days, it's very difficult to strike a turkey mid-morning, whereas back then you could. And we just don't have the big numbers of two-year-olds every year like we did back then. We're just not raising turkeys like we were then anymore.
Yeah, I remember, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, like you would hear turkeys in their traditional spots, but it would be four or five longbeards. And now it's like one or two. And it's just not, or none at all for a lot of people. And it's just like, even though our population is rebounding, it's still not where it was in the 90s.
No, it's not. And I do remember one thing that I saw, a really steep decline there, probably in the late 90s, early 2000s. Jared and I were turkey hunting in Iowa, and we happened to cross this bird that was standing out in a long food plot, and he just stood there. And we started sneaking in on him, and he continued to stand there. And wasn't long, we were like, this turkey's not spotting us. Something's wrong. And we ended up walking over to the turkey. This was over a two-hour period. We finally figured out something's really wrong with him. And he had so much stuff growing on his head, and it had covered his eyes, like with blackhead. And,
oh, geez.
And when that happened, like, there were mornings where I'd go out and hear 20 or 30 different birds gobbling every morning. And the next spring, and that was the only turkey I found like that, the next spring, I could barely hear two or three birds gobbling where I used to hear 20 or 30. So we had a major die-off of blackhead somewhere there in the early 2000s. And I wonder if that hasn't occurred in some areas lately here as well.
Yeah.
I just wonder about it because you really don't find them. You don't know what happened. They die and they're gone, you know?
Yeah.
I just wonder if that didn't happen to Stephen based on Stephen McBee, based on the story he relayed to me. So,
absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
Is that spreading again? That's my thought. You know, it's been mm-hmm. quite a while since I've heard of it, but could that be part of what's wrong right now?
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that from multiple people. Winter flocks everywhere, just giant flock, and then flip a switch and they're gone. Yeah.
Yeah. So are the avian pox, you know, killing some of our flocks? You know, I haven't heard any biologists talking about it, but it would be an explanation that
yeah.
makes sense for the drastic die-offs, you know?
Yeah. You would certainly think that there'd be some feather piles laying around, and people would see them during turkey season. But with as many predators are on the landscape now, a dead turkey probably vanishes pretty quickly.
I would think they vanish pretty quickly. Yep. Yeah.
So, what are some of the things you guys are doing on your farms? And you mentioned not over hunting, but any kind of habitat things that you really enjoy and feel like are a huge help to the wild turkey?
Absolutely. You know, I mentioned it briefly there, but we plant a lot of warm season grasses, and then the management of those grasses on a annual or every biannual period, you know, just keeping that, you know, unwanted brush down, burning it every 3 years, you know, taking a fire through it and keeping those grasses healthy, doing it at the right time of the year. So you're not affecting any nesting at the time that you're burning. But and then, you know, if you've got a few hundred acres of grass, don't burn it all at once, you know, burn a portion and then next year burn more, and don't get rid of all the nesting in the same year. We're doing a lot of TSI work on the farms in areas that I think would improve habitat. And back to my original point, just really being gentle with that overall population and, you know, not taking, you know, I can remember back when, you know, in the 90s, hell, if two birds came in and you doubled, you were out there high-fiving. And now anymore, we really don't consider doubling. You know, we'll take one, leave the other one go. And we're just very careful about that overall population number. And the other thing we do is we keep track of our population from year to year. We have a chart with all the farms that we hunt, and we have number of birds heard, number of jakes seen, number of birds killed, and we have a running chart now that's we're in our fourth year on that. And as an example, last year in the spring of 2019, we saw 72 jakes across the entire spring across all of our populations, our properties rather. This year we were at 96 jakes, so we had a bit of a bump up, and we ended up killing the exact same number of turkeys, which was 32, 2 years in a row. And we've got a huge carryover annually from one farm to the next, from 1 year to the next, to make sure that, you know, we never want to kill more than about 25% of what we think is there on the landscape. And I have a better feeling if we're killing about, you know, 15 to 20% of what's there. So we're very careful about how many turkeys we'll kill. And we base a lot of that off of how many jakes we saw there the previous spring, how many we're hearing there this spring, how many jakes we're seeing currently. So we have confidence to know that it's going to backfill and so on and so forth. So we really do look at the numbers on a daily basis on our charts to see where we were and where we're at now.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds like some great stuff you guys have it going on. Really good ideas. Hopefully some guys caught that and are doing this and will incorporate that into their own farm. So let's talk a little bit about regs, if you don't mind, Mark. With these gradual declines and things, are there things, it sounds kind of like you guys have already self-regulated yourselves to really ensure healthy populations. But, you know, regulations are tough. Basically they're set for adult turkeys. So there's not really anything. One of the biggest issues is the fact that we're not raising more turkeys. A lot of people, you know, when a hen on average has less than one, I think it's like 0.8 poults per hen across the state, it's not really, I mean, that's not setting a population up for a long-term sustainability. So are there ideas based in Missouri? You know, we get to hunt 3 weeks, we get two toms. There's a fall season where you can shoot both male or female turkeys. Where do you feel MDC should go from here in trying to ensure healthy populations?
You know, I think in certain parts of the state, it would be healthy. You know, they have different management zones for deer, right? And they manage different parts of the state, you know, down to the county for differently, particularly CWD zone, so on and so forth. So I don't know why they couldn't go county by county or region by region and really start to look at the overall population, where it was, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and where it's at now, and perhaps consider eliminating the fall season, perhaps considering taking certain areas to one bird, perhaps considering taking the season to 2 weeks perhaps considering moving the season a little bit later so that the bulk of the breeding has already occurred. Yep. I think that would be a major plus right there if they would just do it a little bit later so that they're not killing those birds when they're out there in the peak of breeding and the breeding's already done and the hens are nesting. Like it wouldn't upset me at all to see everything move forward a week to 10 days in the Missouri spring and Iowa as well, both of them, so that you're hunting a little bit later. Yes, the hunting can be a little bit tougher, but that's okay. If the long-term goal is to make sure we have sustainable populations that are actually increasing in population rather than decreasing in population. Whether they'll do any of this or not, I don't know. But how bad does it have to get before they start to consider some of these things? Because, man, there's a lot of guys that are just flat out not going hunting anymore because the birds aren't there. So, you know, the problem may help fix itself just by lack of participation from hunters, because once the resource isn't there, guys aren't interested enough to go. It may start repopulating a little bit on its own because of, you know, the hunting pressure is going to, certainly take a decline as well because the resource isn't there to hunt. So, but I do wish they would implement some of those things, something to at least show that they're aware of the problem and that they're trying to help the areas that are really hardest hit. There's areas in our state, or in Missouri rather, that are in terrible shape. You know, used to be able to hear 10, 12 turkeys. Now you're lucky if you hear one, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They're just not there anymore. So they're going to have to do something in many parts of the state, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think a lot of guys would agree with that. Now, it's just an ongoing question I ask people of, what do you think they should do, or what ideas would you have? And it kind of comes down to the growing trend of maybe knock it down to one bird in places or statewide, whatever we have to do, maybe knock it down to 2 weeks, maybe remove the fall turkey season. And then another one that I hear a lot is maybe open up trapping season, do something more like the southern states where you could trap almost year-round,
yep.
Especially during nesting season. And, all of it would work. It's just a question of whether or not the state agency will implement it. And that brings up a question that I have for you that I've been hearing a lot through the internet and forums and social media world, that a major discussion the MDC is going to have is opening up all-day hunting to kind of combat the drop in tag sales. So if I can ask, what are your overall thoughts on possibility of Missouri opening up to all-day hunting versus closing down at 1 o'clock each day?
You know, for decades, Missouri was looked at as the shining spot in the country for turkey management. And we've always had a close at either noon or one. And I think it should stay like that. It worked forever, for decades. It worked very, very well. My personal belief is it should stay like that. I hunt both Missouri and Iowa. There are opportunities in Iowa to hunt all day. Missouri obviously closes at one, but even in Iowa, those afternoon hunts, they're just not the same as the morning hunts. There's nothing like being out there when they're gobbling and most active. And you can go out there and kill a turkey in the afternoon, but heck, if the problem is decline in population, why are we trying to give even more opportunity to go kill more turkeys? You know, we need to be doing things, in my opinion, to reduce the overall harvest and allow them to rebound a little bit, because that's the beauty of them. They can come back quickly. You give us two or three good hatches in a row, and all of a sudden you're going to be teeming with turkeys statewide again, because they can multiply so very quickly, but they're going to have to, we got to give them that opportunity at some point. So I'm not a big fan of the all day hunting. I do it in Iowa, but the other thing to consider is just how long the days are in the spring. And if you're out there hunting them all day long, it's also taxing on the hunters. I mean, it's you get really tired if you're hunting all day state, you know, because the days are so long. So my preference is I like that 1 o'clock cutoff. I always have. And, you also reduce some of the pressure out there in the woods. I always heard the reason they implemented that was to reduce the pressure when the hens were on their nest or tending to their nest. And I think that's probably wise. And I don't disagree with the 1 o'clock stop at all. I mean, I don't think the all day hunting is necessary by any means. Look how long it's worked so very well.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree with that 100%. But yeah, Mark, well, hopefully there's brighter days ahead. Sounds like you've got some great turkey hunting ahead with all the stuff you guys are doing. I appreciate you joining us and sharing your thoughts and sharing about the season, and thank you so much.
Hey, I appreciate it, Adam. Thank you for having me on.
All right, so we're going to jump into this podcast. We're fortunate enough to have Michael Hunsucker and Sean Luchtel here from Heartland Bowhunter. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we appreciate you bringing us on.
So it's interesting, guys. I'll just explain. So we do a podcast each week, and it's Matt Dye, my business partner, and I. So it's two of us, and we do a lot of interviews with different podcasts. And this is the first time where we've actually had another duo host or come on to our podcast. So it's when we get going, I know there's probably times where when I ask a question, it's going to be piggybacked. One of you will probably answer and the other one will add to it. So I like that. I like that, I guess, tag team mentality here. So for our audience, tell us a little bit about the start of Heartland Bowhunter, how long you guys been doing it, and kind of what you focus on or what your overall message of Heartland Bowhunter is.
Yeah, well, we'll try to not talk over each other because it's hard to do, especially when on these calls, because you can't see each other, so you never know what's going on. But anyways, yeah, no, Sean and I have been friends forever. We kind of grew up hunting together and went to middle school, high school together, and basically just had, you know, common passion in bow hunting. Not a lot of guys who we grew up with were that serious into bow hunting, and so we kind of naturally gravitated towards one another and became friends and started hunting together, started filming some stuff for fun. I mean, back in the day with just a little handy cam, and got a little more serious into it. Started investing in some higher end equipment as we were getting into our college years. And long story short, started manufacturing tree arms, really, is what we did to first get our foot in the door. And then started kind of producing episodic content with the TV route, started putting together stories and episodes and telling stories. That was kind of our big focus, was just quality and storytelling. There wasn't a whole lot of that going on at the time. And so kind of all blew up from there. You know, we were young in college and didn't know what we were going to do, but we knew we wanted to kind of run our own business, and it kind of fit our passion and our hobby, and took it off from there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I usually let Mike tell the story because he's actually usually more long-winded with it. But that was pretty good, short and concise.
That's awesome. Yeah, Matt and I, my business partner, it's funny because when we answer questions, it's like you get the short and sweet version from me usually, and I'll leave out major details. And then with him, he'll give every detail, and we always laugh. Yeah. And it's like, oh, we got the long-winded, and then the guy who's just too short.
Hey, we're trying to be concise here on this podcast. This isn't an hour long podcast now.
There you go. Yeah. So the topic of this week is turkey season. And I feel like we've drug on. So guys, you know, we've done turkey series from basically February. We talked about all the habitat management that we do and recommend to transitioning into the hunting season, and now here we are still talking about it. And I know there's guys that are probably like, I'm sick of talking about turkeys, I'm sick of hearing about turkeys, but I think it's important that we stick to it, because it's not a wonderful story right now for the wild turkey through much of the United States. So before we jump into that, tell me a little bit about your guys' spring season. Was it successful?
Yeah. Yep. We had a pretty good season, I would say. I kind of kicked mine off out in Kansas, and you know, actually that's usually where I always kick mine off. Sometimes Nebraska, but it never seems to go well for me there, so I didn't go there this year. But yeah, I kicked it off there, and I let Chandler, the guy that spends the majority of his time filming me, I let him shoot first. He'd actually never killed a turkey in his entire life, so we were able to get him one. Yeah, out there with our buddy Cole Shoemaker, and he filled his first turkey tag, and then I was up to bat there on the last day and didn't get an opportunity. But yeah, I went from there back to Missouri, and we had a decent season, I would say, in Missouri. It still wasn't anything like it used to be, but compared to the last couple years, it wasn't horrible. And then I went out and killed my first Merriam's out in Wyoming, so was good for me. I know Mike had a hit and miss season, but I'd say overall it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I mean, I kicked that off in Kansas too, and I actually killed both my Kansas birds in 3 days, I believe. So, and one of the days was just bad wind or just bad rain and wind, and so the hunting in Kansas was great. You know, I was in kind of same as Sean, north central northwestern Kansas, and hunting Rios out there, and then I went with Brandon to Colorado, who films with me, and I filmed him that for a handful of days out there, and it was pretty hit or miss out there. The birds were pretty grouped up, and they were not real receptive to calls and decoys, so we ended up making one pay at the last day with a shotgun. He wasn't coming home. Brandon didn't want to come home empty-handed, so we got even with him on the last day and sat under the roost with no decoys and made it happen. It was pretty cool hunt, but yeah, Missouri was kind of same old story for me. Just tough, man, and it's been that way for the past few years. Really, really hit or miss, and I don't know. I've never seen birds so like decoy shy and just weird acting is the best way to put it. I mean, just weird. Like, we hunt enough to where, like, occasionally, like, you'll get on a bird that just happens to do it right, and you get, you know, it all comes together. But man, it just weird. And the way we do it, obviously, you know, we bow hunt primarily, and so we're bow hunting. We're not using ground blind, so you almost have to use decoys. You know, we're filming, so you got two guys sitting out there with camera equipment, a bow, you know, and trying to brush in or whatever. And so, you know, you almost have to have decoys to get the attention off of you. It's not like you're just sitting up against a tree with a shotgun and, you know, if they see you, too late, game over, you know. So, you know, it's we need the birds to cooperate in order for it to come together the way, you know, we want it to come together. So when they're acting like, you know, any sort of decoy shy or hanging up, it just makes it really, really difficult. So it's definitely been a challenge the past, you know, I'd say 3 to 4 years, really.
Yeah. Wow, that's quite the challenge to try to bow hunt turkeys no blind from the ground. I attempted it a couple of times, and I was like, nope, not for me. We're going to stick to shotguns. My hat's off to you guys for making that happen.
It's one of those deals. It's a huge rush, but if they're committed to the decoys, and a lot of times, you know, we're usually using a Jake decoy, right, or some sort of strutter male decoy.
Yeah.
And they're coming in aggressive, they're coming to fight, or at least coming in strutting around it in circles. And so once they strut facing away and they block their head with their tail fan, it gives you the opportunity to draw. And usually sometimes if they're like whacking the decoy, kicking it, spurring it, like they're so mad, you can get away with a lot. But either way, you know, you can get away with getting your bow drawn and get it done. But if they don't commit to the decoys, man, oh, it's tough to get drawn back without them seeing you and freaking out. And nobody wants to shoot at a bird, you know, walking away or running away, or, you know, just they're just tough to kill as is. So
yeah, what totally off topic, but what kind of are you guys, since you're bow hunting, are you head shooting or are you body shooting, and what broadhead are you using to make that most effective?
Yeah, we're a lot of times we're body shooting them with NAP kill zone max, okay. Usually, which what is that, like a 2, and I can't remember, Mike, is it 2.38,
I think.
3/8, yeah.
Yeah.
Cutting diameter, which helps big. A lot. But yeah, like, you know, we've shot a handful over the years in the head, which is obviously more effective. Drops them right in their tracks, but yeah, that's a tough shot too. Because getting them in inside of even 15 yards is really, really tough. Hitting a small head over 15 yards is extremely tough. So we tend to body shoot them.
Yeah,
most of the guys that are using the guillotines head shooting them are using double bowls, getting them really close, you know, in a pop up blind, and so. For us, you know, we're using just expandable broadheads, and for turkeys, it's like, if you're going to bow hunt them, like the bigger the broadhead, the better, like, you know, you're not too concerned about penetration and their vitals are tiny. So like, you know, the bigger the broadhead, the more advantage you have.
Interesting. Well, that's good to know. I know it's such a small room for air just to even get the turkey within range. So that's why I had to ask that follow-up question. It was like, man, there's a lot of variables stacked against you guys to make that successful. So when you see it all unfold in video, it's probably a lot of stuff that goes into it to make it all happen that people probably forget.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, honestly, for like us, though, our style is, even though we are kind of run and gun with a bow, you know, and it still takes time for us to set up. And as you know, I mean, think of how many turkey hunts you've had that have come together in the, you know, blink of an eye, kind of, oh, bird fired up, you sat down, you called a couple times, and boom, there he was. Like, that's the one thing that I miss being able to do, is just literally be extremely mobile and be set up in the matter of 30 seconds instead of 5 minutes, 10, you know, whatever. 5 minutes is probably about as fast as we can make it happen by, you know, getting the decoys out, you know, getting set down, setting the tripods up and all that kind of stuff. So,
oh man. Yeah, that definitely, for a guy with little patience as is, I can see why toting a shotgun is probably more my game. Oh man. So let's talk a little bit. You mentioned it about the population the last few years. You guys are both Missouri boys. So where would you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10 currently where we're at as far as healthy population? You go out, you hear turkeys gobbling, you've got multiple options to go, and just overall seeing hens, seeing just a lot of turkeys.
And I would have to say, compared to what it used to be, I would give it a 5.
Oh.
I would say it's just, I feel like there used to be a lot more options. And granted, we're hunting, I would say, some of the best ground in the area to turkey hunt. And compared to what it used to be, I don't know. It's just, it's not what it once was. And for instance, our farm up north, gosh, you'd go there and, you know, you'd hear 8 to 12 birds in the morning and have a few different options there to go after them. And then now it's like, you might have a day like that. And then you might, I mean, I had a day where I couldn't find a bird, a single one, didn't hear a gobble. And that's just unheard of, I feel like, for that area. I think it's definitely gone downhill pretty quickly over the last few years.
Yeah. And we're hunting, you know, a lot of, a lot of private ground, and some bigger tracks, some smaller tracks, a little variety of everything. But like, it seems like, you know, even on the properties where, you know, there are, you know, fairly good populations, you just don't get those satellite birds on, you know, on the properties adjoining, like the small tracks. Like, we hunt a lot of stuff, you know, locally that we have little, you know, an 80-acre piece here, a 60-acre piece here that used to have, you know, two gobblers on it every year, or, you know, properties that traditionally have birds on every year that don't even have a single bird on them now. And, you know, it's just been one of those deals where it's just like, you know, the farms that have good populations have continued to have turkeys, but the hunting has gotten way more difficult. And it's just, I can't explain it. I don't know enough about it to where if it's there, they understand their social structure and they, you know, they know the birds know each other really well, way more than they did when the numbers were higher and birds moved around and the competition was higher. I don't know. There's obviously a reason, you know, that they're acting differently and that it's gotten to be more difficult, and observed numbers are for sure way down. And I actually got to looking, you know, MDC sent out the, you know, harvest report for this year, and I got to looking back at the history, and they quit releasing the number of licenses sold, but I look back at the data of the harvest data, and you can just see the downward trend over the past, I don't know, 6 years, basically since, like, you know, 2016, there's been a pretty strong downward trend in harvest numbers, which, you know, obviously that can be affected by hunter participation, which that was what they had claimed the numbers this year were down, because hunter participation was down compared to last year with COVID, a lot of people at home, you know, able to work from home, numbers, hunter participation was way up. And so that was created kind of a false spike in the in the harvest numbers, but overall, that you can see the trend has been on the downward slide. And I'd love to see that compared to license sales, but I couldn't find that data. But there's no doubt that, you know, that numbers are on the decline for sure, at least in areas in the state that we're hunting.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll reiterate, that's what we've seen. You know, as far as the harvest, I can still remember 2004. That was the most successful, most birds harvested in a 3-week season. In that 24 years of a 3-week season, it was like over 60,000 birds harvested in 2004. And it's basically kind of gradually fallen off with a few upticks, but you can see the pattern is definitely going down from 2004. I actually was able to dig and make some contacts, but there was about just under a 10% drop in license sales from 2020 to 2021. It was just over 11,000 tags that were fewer sold from those 2 years. So in case you guys hadn't heard those numbers. So, you know, once again, you said it, Mike, 2020, a lot of guys were off work because of COVID. So there was kind of that false uptick. I find it very hard to believe that MDC is just saying that the harvest numbers were down because of fewer people hunting. We all three can sit there and say, I don't think that's the main reason.
I agree. I mean, obviously when we have a slow morning, and the hunt doesn't go as planned, or maybe we didn't hear a gobble or whatever, we're back at the truck earlier than expected. And the first thing we always do is drive around. So we do a lot of driving around as well. And I mean, you get a good idea for what other birds are in the area, and you also get a good idea of what other hunters are in the area. And I mean, we've been doing that for years, and I feel like we're seeing far more hunters in the mm-hmm. surrounding areas that we hunt. And
yep.
And I feel like that's expected with more people getting into hunting. And I mean, we're surrounded by it every single day. We get to see how the community has grown. And I know that we hear that a lot. Oh, the hunter numbers are down, and you know, we need to get more people into hunting. Well, I feel like we have, as far as from the grand scheme of things with the total population in the country, you know, maybe the hunter recruitment as far as how many people we're adding to our population each year, and then the amount of hunters and the increase there, maybe that is down. But overall, as far as a hunter population, there's no doubt that it's grown.
Mm-hmm. I think about at least it in my mind. From the 2000s when I was in high school to now, just doing the drive around, I can remember when you would see, or you would mess up on a bird or kill a bird and it's next guy up, and you would drive around. It wouldn't take very far. You'd find birds. There'd be birds in fields. There'd be lone hens walking around. And it is just not that case right now. You drive around, it's like you're lucky to see a few hens around. And there's certainly not that wad of turkeys where there's a strutter and six hens in this field, and go a little further and there's a couple strutters and a few hens. Like, we're not seeing it. And it sounds like the same thing for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you guys, you know, as we look at this, what kind of ideas would you have as far as things that MDC or just things to consider? Maybe it's just the private landowner, of things he can do directly on his farm that may help versus regulations. Michael, why don't you kick us off and ideas that you have?
Well, I mean, obviously there's a problem, and there's probably a lot of contributing factors, you know, multiple that are contributing to the problem of the turkey population decrease. But I think, you know, first and foremost, I think the number one easiest way would be to limit the number of birds that people are able to harvest. You saw Kansas do it last year or year before last on the eastern part of the state, where traditionally Kansas is a two bird state, and in the eastern part of the state where numbers are down, they went to, you know, one bird only. And I think, listen, I love the turkey. I love killing turkeys, but I want to be able to do this for a long time. And I want my kids to be able to enjoy this like we did growing up, man. Like, I took my son out one time and got right underneath the roost, like perfect. I was like, we'll just put out a hen decoy with a shotgun, you know, we got so close to the roost, pitch black, you know, perfect. And the bird flew down, like saw the decoy, like shy, went the other way. And my son was just like, oh, like he was all excited. But then like, it's not fun for kids when, you know, when the birds aren't cooperating and doing it right. So, you know, if us going from a two birds to one bird, you know, makes that difference and we can get the swing population going back the other way, I'm all for that. You know, that's just one step that could help things. You know, I'm sure the data's out there, but you know, probably the majority of hunters don't shoot two birds anyways, so it may not make that much of an impact. But at least would be a start in the right direction. You know, we do a lot of prescribed fire, a lot of timber stand improvement type projects on our properties that help, you know, create nesting and habitat and that type of stuff. And so, you know, that's an area that could be, you know, improved. I know there's been a lot of loss of habitat through CRP programs going away and that type of stuff, to where, you know, there's less nesting habitat, and that makes it more easy for predation. And so that could be another contributing factor. But I think if we kind of can get everybody on board and get a movement going forward of kind of attacking all the different aspects, I think that's, you know, going to be a start in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree with Mike. I think we've definitely all need to come together and try to turn this thing around, because it isn't headed in the right direction. And I don't think shooting more turkeys is necessarily going to help being able to shoot two turkeys. But like Mike said, I don't know. I also don't know how much of an effect that really has, because there's not that many guys out there that probably are filling both tags. I'd have to see that data to really know. But yeah, I think habitat is the most important and crucial thing. And predation, like Mike said as well, but from the habitat standpoint, you know, I think burning and TSI as well, like you said, helps tremendously, especially for nesting purposes and trying to restructure that native habitat to where it needs to be. And that's something that's kind of gone unnoticed over the last, well, probably forever. You know, there's invasive species everywhere that doesn't help. And I think just people being better informed with how to create that habitat and make it better is very crucial. And here's my shameless plug. We're putting on a film in land school here in a couple months, to where we will actually go over our habitat structures and how we improve the habitat on the farms that we hunt. And that's actually something that, you know, we've always talked about, is creating better habitat for wildlife and deer, but it kind of goes unnoticed for turkeys and the nesting, like I was saying. I think that that we can all help improve that by going through and doing prescribed fire and just kind of getting that forest floor cleared out and native vegetation coming back. But yeah, predation as well. Sorry, I think I'm kind of rambling on here, but predation has definitely gone unnoticed too. Yeah. The fur bears market isn't worth much anymore, so nobody really coon hunts, I don't believe. And
no,
I know the coons, the possums, the skunks, and now I guess even armadillos. There's a dead one down the road from here, which I've never even seen here at my house.
No kidding.
They're making their way north.
They're starting to move in. And
come down to my place and have all of them you want.
I'm okay. Yeah, they wreak havoc on those turkey nests, as we all know.
So you said a couple things there that really point out to me. And when we talk about regulation changes, and it's like, how many guys are really killing two birds? Probably not a ton. But at the same time, I think of the deer season, is like, it wasn't that long ago we had three buck tags in MDC. I mean, the percentage of people filling all three buck tags was very, very small, but MDC felt it was a nice enough step in the right direction to remove that one. So it makes me go, well, there's probably hope that they would say, okay, you know, we're going to knock it down to one tag, hopefully for just a few years, let the population build back up. I don't know. I mean, in this day and age, it's hard to say what MDC is going to do.
Yeah. I mean, and they're like, you know, listen, they're under a lot of pressure, right? Like it's like a, you know, you can't make everybody happy. It's totally a lose-lose situation. So obviously, you know, they're doing the best they can with what they have, and obviously you mentioned before the call, you know, we're in Missouri, we're in a lot better situation than a lot of other, you know, states and agencies, and yep. So it's, you know, it's difficult to, you know, point the finger in any one direction, like I said, but you know, when it comes down to making decisions like that deer tag change, like on the surface is like, oh, look, like they care, like they're making a decision, they're trying to do something, when in reality it's like, okay, what's that really gonna do? You know, how many guys are really killing $3? And it's a pretty small, probably didn't make that big of a change, but it's a step in the right direction. And the turkey thing I think would be similar. And you know, I don't know, it's interesting. It's every state's different, everybody approaches things differently. You know, we hunt Kansas and Nebraska, and they both have early archery seasons and have separate shotgun seasons. Missouri's always had just 3-week season, any weapon. And so, you know, that's interesting too. And, you know, that obviously I'm sure plays a role in the harvest of birds and the pressure of birds and in the hunting pressure, so to speak. And so,
yeah,
you know, in Missouri, we got 3 weeks and those birds are getting hammered 3 weeks straight. They're getting pressured. Yep. And granted, we do only, and this is may kind of segue into your next segment, but we do only hunt mornings. You know, we can only hunt till 1 o'clock in Missouri, where the Kansas and Nebraska can hunt all day. And so Missouri's pressure on the turkeys is more concentrated in 3 weeks, but we do give them the evenings off to, you know, breed, roost, regroup and all that stuff, as opposed to the other states where you can hunt all day, but seasons are months, you know, months long. So.
Absolutely. So yeah, that is a great segue. We've heard rumors and it's becoming more and more talked about through online forums and Facebook groups, but it appears that one of the big pushes that Missouri Department of Conservation will make for 2022 season would be an all day hunting season, which is almost just mind blowing to me from a guy that I don't remember a time where it ever was all day in Missouri. So it's like the idea that you could hunt in the afternoons, it's just like, I almost like the purity of the MDC season or the Missouri season, where it's like you had to shut it off at 1, is like, I can't even grasp what that would even look like, or even if I would want to do it. But you know, I feel like, well, I'll let you guys answer before I give my take, but it's a little weird in this day and age to be considering expanding the hours that we can hunt. But if that was, I guess, what is your guys' thoughts on that? Sean, kick it off.
I do not think that's a good idea at all. I don't know. I like you just said, Adam, it's a tradition almost. It's become a tradition in Missouri to cut it off at 1 o'clock and really go on about your business and take care of your daily life in the afternoon. And that's not why I disagree with it. I disagree with it because I think that I kind of think that they're actually segueing themselves into saying there's low hunter participation. So now we're going to extend the season to all day to bring more, to see if we can get more hunter participation. And that is exactly what it's going to do. I know that I've spoken to a handful of non-resident hunters in Missouri, and that's usually their number one complaint. What? Missouri stops at 1 o'clock. This is so stupid. I've never heard of that. Why does Missouri have to have those regulations? Well, the turkeys need a rest, I feel like. You know, we've got a ton of small parcels of land, and with all these different properties having hunters on them, the birds are pushed around a lot. And I think it's great that they have that break in the afternoon to go about their business. And we're always worried about a bad hatch and, you know, early or late breeding or this or that. Well, it gives them a chance to actually breed and create more turkeys, and giving them all day pressure, I just don't see how that's going to help. And it's only going to attract more non-resident hunters. And that's, you know what, I'm typically a non-resident hunter. I hunt a lot of different states and I'm okay with non-resident hunting, but bringing in more people with a declining population is not going to help. I don't feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a complete step in the opposite direction, completely wrong direction. I can't imagine. I can't actually that, you know, before when we got started talking about doing this podcast, that's the first I had heard of it, honestly.
Yeah.
And I literally was like, you gotta be kidding me, right? Like that's,
what I thought.
You know, like that's, yeah. I mean, that's it's a complete step in the wrong direction, sends the complete wrong message. I just can't fathom why that would be an option even, especially coming from MDC, who has always hung their hat on tradition, you know, roots. And, you know, the rifle season is in the second week of November because of, you know, hunter participation. We want it to be, you know, everybody to have the best experience and tradition. Like tradition is like number two, I believe. We had a meeting, we sat down with some of the folks down there a couple years ago and talked about it. And I'm pretty sure tradition was pretty high up on the list of why, you know, rifle season continues to be where it is and hunter recruitment being number one. But yeah, tradition is big. And so I can't imagine going against the tradition of Missouri. But maybe it comes with caveat. Like I said, maybe it comes with an early archery season. And a separate, you know, shorter gun season with one bird, who knows? There may be a lot of things in the works, but yeah, if no other changes happen and they go to allow PM hunting during the 3-week season, I think that's just terrible.
I think it sends
terrible move.
A terrible message to the people. You know, there's so many guys, everybody's got an opinion right now, but MDC, one of the big opinions is that they only really care about tag sales and not the game. But obviously they have to care about the game because that's where tag sales come in. But to me, it looks in a day where harvest is way down, obviously observation and hearing birds is down. You can hear that almost statewide. And then there's liberalizing the season and making it more opportunity to hunt. Just to me, it sends such a bad, bad message. But I'm not Jeff City in an office making those decisions. So it is a difficult place for them to sit trying to keep all parties happy. I just feel like that's a bad, bad move.
Yeah. And you made a great point, Adam. I'm just a critic too. Like I feel like it looks that way, like, oh, they want more revenue, but they also are the ones that are sitting there studying all the data. And they know that game is very crucial and important for the state of Missouri, and it's just my opinion as well. I don't know all the facts.
Yeah, guys. Well, I appreciate you jumping on this week, Sean. You pointed something out. I want to allow people to go find it, but you mentioned some sort of school. So, if you want to plug where they can find you and follow along, and maybe sign up for that class.
Yeah. So we're putting on a film and. We're putting on a film school, and then on a Saturday, which is July 10th, and then July 11th, we have our land management class. So two separate classes. You can sign up for both if you'd like. But the land management class, we will be covering some in-classroom stuff on timber stand improvement, prescribed fire, food plot, all that stuff. And then we'll go out in the field later on in the day and go tour one of our farms and kind of show everyone how we go about things and the process behind all of it. So if you guys want more information on it, just go to our website. You can look that up or find us on social media, and feel free to ask us any questions you might have, and we'll be happy to answer.
Awesome. Well, guys, thanks for coming on. I sure do appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us. Enjoyed the discussion, and oh man, I can't wait if they announce a PM hunting the chaos that will ensue.
Yeah,
fork and torches headed to Jeff City.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Adam.
Yeah.
Yep. Appreciate it. Yep.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.